This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9, the business station. 7:37 right now. I'm Melissa Idris with Julian Ng and Ibrahim Sani, Friday the 26th of August. As we look at the business news this morning, Uber has announced that they have suffered losses of about $1.3 billion in the first half of this year. Now, Uber's not a public company, but every 3 months or so, dozens of shareholders get on a conference call to hear the latest details on its business performance from the head of finance at Uber, Gautam Gupta. So yesterday, Gupta told investors that Uber's losses had increased in the second quarter. Even in the US, where Uber had been turning a profit during the first quarter, the company is now, once again, losing company in that market.
You know, the core reason why they suffer these heavy losses is because of the subsidies of Uber drivers. And this is by Gupta's own admission, right? Because they believe that the responsible culprit in the losses is because of the subsidies of the Uber drivers. And if you've taken Uber rides, it's rather cheap. Now, it means that somebody has to pay. There's no free lunch. And in this sense, it's Uber that is paying these drivers.
Well, it's a price war, isn't it? The reason why they have to offer subsidies of that level is because they're competing with, you know, companies like Lyft, and you know they're in a price war with Didi Chuxing in China before they pulled out, that is. But you know, no one's going to win in a price war. I mean, in terms of companies, no one's going to win. We win as consumers.
I think it's also a turf war. It goes beyond price war just to get enough customers to buy into the system of the platform. It's a real classic internet case of just, you know, in the past, getting eyeballs, getting enough subscribers, getting enough people signing up onto your emails, you know, getting enough people signing up onto your TV platform, right, in the short term, giving them discounts, and then in the longer term, try to make some money by charging them a fair price, a fair market price. But, you know, this whole idea of making losses while increasing market value is not unheard of in the tech sector. Amazon, for example, is famous for doing that, right? Every year they're losing money, but the share price of Amazon goes up. And today, of course, Jeff Bezos is one of the richest people in the world as a result of his ownership of Amazon.
Yesterday, we talked about Forbes' most innovative companies that list, right? They have an annual ranking, and how Tesla, Elon Musk, is right at the top of that list. And we noted that Uber was not on this list. And we also discussed the, you know, the kind of the quandary between being profitable and being innovative, right? Yeah. So sometimes you can be innovative and not make a cent, in fact, lose lots of money.
And that's exactly the case with Tesla, because while they are innovative, they haven't broken profit ever. And for a company that is around for like 10, 20 years, Tesla, while carrying that tag of the most innovative company, they do not break profit. The same problem is suffering from Uber, but it's worse because Uber can be argued to be not innovative and still losing money. But when we talk about this price war and turf war, right? I think these losses might be mitigated in the future because Uber has indeed cut a deal with Didi Chuxing, if you remember that, guys. Mm-hmm. And they have tried to got themselves out of China and perhaps focus their energy and efforts elsewhere. Perhaps this is where companies like Didi Chuxing might see an uptick in their own revenue and profits, and perhaps the same thing can happen to Uber as well.
I really wonder what those investors on the con call were thinking. I wish I was a fly on the wall on that con call, right? Can you imagine what the investors must be thinking as the head of finance of Uber is telling them, sorry, we lost so much money, but don't worry,
I don't think they flinch.
Yeah, I know. I think they
go into this knowing full well that the cash burn coming out of Uber would be prodigious. And I think that they are just sitting tight and hoping that one day it will become like an Amazon or a Netflix or something. And incidentally, China to Uber was one of the biggest loss makers, losing about $2 billion over there over the last few years. And over the last few years, I think globally, Uber has lost $4 billion. It's the highest among any internet company we've seen, any dot-com entity that we've seen as well. And I'm just wondering if this will blow up in our faces, because we're talking about Swiber in Singapore, right? Oil and gas sector. So much of people's expectations and valuations in the tech sector are based on what's Uber valued at. And if Uber is not Currently, the valuation is about over 60 billion.
If 69, if that's, I believe, is the latest.
If that's not the true valuation, because one of the traditional measures of valuation is profitability, right? If that's not the true valuation, if that's half of that, say, and that, by the way, is a figure that was given by an expert coming out of NYU, he says that Uber is worth less than 30 billion US.
Whoa.
Whether this will come back and bite us and blow up in our faces.
Well, speaking about Singapore, yesterday, Singapore became the first country in the world to launch a self-driving taxi service called Nutonomy. So it was founded by two researchers from MIT, and this testing actually beat up many competitors trying to do the same thing, Uber included, and Uber was beat by a matter of days.
Yeah, so this trial, even though it's small, illustrates how intense the race is to develop these self-driving cars. And if you think about it, the biggest hindrance for self-driving cars in any market is on government regulators. But it seems that Singapore is actually gung-ho on this, and the Singapore regulators are allowing this to be tested on the streets.
I have to say, though, what fantastic branding this has been for Singapore. I mean, for them to be able to claim, well, we are the first country in the world to try out this self-driving cars, right? I'm just going to quote the Wall Street Journal here and the way they've written it, this fantastic branding for Singapore. Singapore government has long sought to turn the city-state into a hub for disruptive technology through generous financial assistance programs and research partnerships with firms like Nutonomy. This was the Wall Street Journal's editorial opinion. And I thought, it was like, whoa. Actually, Singapore's got themselves in this race. Singapore is now a contestant in the technology race around the world. Where are we? Malaysia? Are we even in the heats? Are we even, you know, part of this race?
Well, you have to wonder whether Nutonomy will make any money at all. Of course, it's one thing to say that you're first to get there, but can you sustain that business for the long term? And they are competing with Uber on this. And Uber, as we know, even though they're making billions of dollars of losses, still is very deep-pocketed, can raise money quite easily. Whether they'll be able to compete with Uber, but nevertheless, this is a service that I'm looking forward to. I want to try it out if I go to Singapore.
Me too. I
think it will improve productivity for many people in Singapore if this becomes prevalent. But at the same time, will kill a lot of jobs.
You're not scared, Jules. No, the car has no driver, you know. You
I
just
know.
Get into the car.
It's exciting,
no one
it's
there.
Exciting, isn't
at
it?
At least for this trial, there's a real human driver behind it.
Oh, okay.
Just
all
to
right.
make sure everything's all
at
right.
At least.
But I think the core question right now is not just about the disruptor and possibly profitability. Because if you think about it, the last revolution that we had with the transportation industry was a steam engine revolution. Nobody actually questioned how profitable that business was to the United Kingdom, for instance. But the government just did it anyway. The steam engine rolled out, and it was rolled out globally. I think the same thing could be happening here, where there could be some revolution to the transport industry, but the profitability might take a hit from here.
Well, we're also watching the Jackson Hole meeting, which kicks off today. And for markets, the main event comes when Janet Yellen, Fed Chair, delivers her address. Every word will likely be examined for hints as to the central bank's possible path in terms of raising interest rates.
I think it's been a tug of war between the doves and the hawks coming out of all the Fed presidents for different states in America. And I think the hawks are kind of taking over right now, making statements to the fact that it's time. You know, the time has come.
Well, I'm just watching some market, the odds of a rate rise, as implied by the futures market. This year, it seems that about 53% is the odds that investors see a rate rise this year.
That's essentially 50-50,
it's
right?
It's a coin flip. It could happen this year or it could not happen.
Yeah, but other areas to look on top of the indication of a liftoff in September is also the utilization of the economic data, because some jobs numbers have shown that the U.S. economy is growing, but the Fed might not be reacting to this. So analysis would be on how they would square this kind of view at the Feds.
I also think that the magnitude is quite important. So the signal that's being sent out is that the interest rate must be reset. Mm-hmm. These are, according to Ben Lebrun, emergency rates, right? And they got to be reset. But how much it will go up will determine the fate of the equities markets around the world.
7:46 right now. After this, we look at Axiata and Maybank's second quarter financials. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.